This is episode 159 of the Prepper Website Podcast. Today's articles are Retreat Arrival Checklist and Why and How to Wargame Your Emergency Disaster Plans. Hey, I'm Todd Sepulveda, the editor of PrepperWebsite.com. This podcast is an audible version with some commentary of articles that have been posted on Prepper Website, a daily curation of preparedness information. These articles are some of the best that have been recently posted on PrepperWebsite.com. All article links and show information can be found on the PrepperWebsitePodcast.com. Hey, thanks for starting your week off with us again. It's a great Monday. Looking forward to another week of podcast episodes with you here on the Prepper Website Podcast. Last week, my Thursday and Friday episodes were like really short. And Ray sent a little message on episode 158, left a comment. And he said, "Hey, you didn't sound like your normal self to me today. I'll be praying for you." And so there are some reasons. I did mention on the podcast that I would say why a little bit later on. I was out of town. And so normally when I go out of town, I try to, if I have, I'm going to have internet access, which most of the time I do. I'm going to do my podcast. If it's a day or an evening to where I do the podcast, I'm going to do it from a hotel room, or I'm going to attempt to do it. And just because I want to stay as consistent as possible. You know, I was thinking about this, and there are going to be times where I know undoubtedly my voice, I lose my voice, or it's just really painful to swallow or to talk. If you have been with me since the very beginning, you know, at the very beginning, I had some allergies. It just seemed like I couldn't breathe very well. And it seems like lately it's been bad again here lately. I mean, a lot of people are talking about the sinuses and the allergies and all that kind of stuff. And you know, we've heard some bad, you know, there was this one article that because of Harvey and because of all the rain and the water and the mold in homes and stuff, that allergies could be bad for many, many years afterwards. So I don't know if that's true or not, but you know, I know that have been feeling sinus pressure, and like a lot of other people. So I've been using allergy blends and the diffuser at work, and trying to utilize that. But also, you know, over the counter meds if it goes there and if you need that. But anyway, was out of town. I was at a pastor's conference in Dallas, Texas, and so we're doing it there. So a couple of funny things, and one of the reasons probably why I didn't sound like myself on the Friday podcast was. Our hotel room when we got there wasn't very cool, and so we turned it down, and we went to our evening service, our gathering, and then we came back, and it wasn't cool at all. So I mean, we had it down really low, and so we knew that something was wrong. So we called the hotel, and they came over, and they sent somebody over to an engineer. And they got into the ceiling, I guess. And I don't know what he did. He did some stuff up there and moved some stuff around. And he had a thermometer on the vent and definitely started cooling. Well, it cooled so much. It was super, super cold. And so we experienced that all Thursday. And we didn't want to. We would move it down lower, but it just seemed like it wouldn't go off. It was really crazy. So when I did my podcast, we didn't want to call them to tell them it was too cold, because we didn't want them to turn it off. It just seemed, I don't know, it was like an on and off thing. We were just going to deal with it. But anyway, so I had the comforter completely around me, and it was my wife was joking. She said she should have taken a picture of me. But this comforter completely around me with my head sticking out and talking into the microphone and doing the podcast. You know, of course, under the covers, everything was fine. I mean, they have, you know, great covers and down comforters and all that kind of junk. But when I was out doing the podcast and the vent, of course, was hitting me, you know, right in the back, I was pretty cold. So I was that was part of it there. The other part is that, you know, the conferences were, it's a great time because you get to, you know, meet up with other pastor friends and you get to, you know, spend time with them. But, you know, you're going to meetings and then you're going out and you're socializing, you're having fun. And then the meetings are late. And then usually after those meetings, you're getting together. Maybe you go out to eat or something like that. And then coming home to do the podcast. So it was really, really late. Actually, I think it had already kind of, normally I do the podcast the evening before, so Thursday night, I think it had already gotten into midnight or into the next day by the time I finally posted it. So it was pretty late. So that's probably why I didn't sound like myself. It was late. I was cold. It was, but it was fun. We had a great time in Dallas, spending time with friends and you know, spending some time with the Lord. Had a great time at church this Sunday, and so hope you had a chance and to go out and get some things done and experience the weekend and maybe get out and get some dirt time. And all that good stuff. But like I said, here we are Monday. You're going to push through another week and another week of podcasts. So looking forward to spending time with you this week and you know, all the good things that are coming up for us. Hey, on the Facebook page, I posted a video of what is going on in Spain. Now, in Spain, there's some Catalonia. Is voting for independence, and they're part of Spain. I don't know, and I'm not an expert in all of this, and I'm not saying I am or anything like that. I don't know all the specifics behind it. The reason I posted the video was because they had the cops in all their riot gear, and they weren't like the cops that you normally see here. Like if you didn't know, if you didn't hear any of the language or anything like that, you didn't know what it was, you would have thought maybe there were cops in riot gear here in America. But then these cops were going after it, man. They were like, they were knocking people down. They were just going, hitting them, and sometimes hitting them with their batons, and sometimes hitting them even when it wasn't necessary. And so I thought, man, that's absolutely crazy. And what I was thinking is eventually, if the people were going to be dealt like that, and they were voting for independence, and they felt like, you know, because they're just tired of the way the government is running things and how they're running them into the ground. And my thing is, I thought that the public, eventually, the people that are protesting, are going to start to rally, because when you look at the video, it's just kind of like they're just people and they're just shouting at the police and different things like that. They're not really attacking the police, but the police are attacking them. And so I'm like, man, if this continues on, the public is going to realize, hey, you know, we're going to change our tactics and then we're going to go after these people. And so it's just another one of those things that you always hear is where government wants to stay in power. Government wants to keep control, and they don't like the fact that Catalonia is voting for independence. And so I was watching another, and I believe it was CBS News. I went to YouTube, and I just typed in Catalonia. I wanted to see some other reports. And CBS was reporting basically that the cops were brought in. So these cops in riot gear were brought in from other places in Spain. So there weren't Catalonia police, right? So they were brought in from other places in Spain to wreak havoc on the people and to cause the people not to be able to vote. Now, the voting did go on. I think 90% of the precincts were reporting, and their vote did pass. So, you know, they did vote for independence. I don't know what that's going to look like. I don't know what that's going to mean. But I can guarantee you that the government of Spain is not going to go lightly on this. I mean, they're not. They're losing Catalonia, and I believe one of the reasons why they're wanting to break away is that, you know, they have a little bit more of the economic status. They're a little bit more stable, and it's the rest of the country that's kind of like sucking the life out of them, right? And so, like, hey, we want to be able to manage our own money. We don't want to be sending it to other parts of the country that are just going to be wasting the money. And so, you know, you always hear about, you know, hey, if there was a real collapse here, that UN forces or other forces would come in, and these people wouldn't care necessarily, so they would do all kinds of things. And really, that's what you kind of see in Catalonia. You see these cops coming from other places, and just beating up on the people. There's video of all of that, and there's video, that CBS video that I saw. Showed the police in riot gear that were from other parts of Spain fighting against the firemen, because the firemen are in their gear and they're lined up and they're pushing against the firemen and stuff like that. And then there's also a video of the police, the Catalonia police, that are not in riot gear. They're just in their regular police uniform, pushing up against these guys in all their riot gear and stuff. And so that CBS report showed the cops basically was saying that the people ran the cops off. These cops that were in riot gear from other parts of Spain kind of ran them off. And so you see them, in their riot gear, in their, their baton. Some of them had, rifles and stuff like that to send off, smoke and all that junk. And then you see them loading up in their vehicles and going off. And so the people did prevail, but it does show you how government is going to try to maintain control as much as possible. And so maybe they realize, hey, we didn't come in there strong enough with enough force. So one of the things I'm going to be looking at is like, how is the government of Spain going to be reacting to what Catalonia has done? Because they're not going to go lightly. They're going to want the money that they have from Catalonia. They're going to want the tax income. They're going to want all of that kind of stuff. And so they're going to go in there. If this riot police stuff didn't work, they're going to ratchet it up. They're going to go in there stronger. And so what are the people in Catalonia are going to do? This time around, they were able to push back the police. But if the government of Spain sends in military, I mean, what is that going to look like? And something to keep an eye on. So I did post that video over on the Facebook group. If you're interested in going and checking that out, I mean, people are bloodied and people were hit. Oh, women. They like no shame. I mean, they just kind of, this woman was on the ground and they just wound up taking shots at her. There's other good stuff on the Facebook group too, and people are asking questions about nuts and trees and stuff, and I really love that. I really love that people are taking an active interest in, like, I don't feel like I have to be there managing it and pushing it. I love that people are taking initiative and asking questions, and other people are coming in and chiming in and answering. And so I love that about the Facebook. I love the way that it's just kind of forming and happening, and love the people that are there. So I really, if you are on the Facebook group, or more than likely, if you're in the Facebook group, you are a listener to the podcast. So I just want to say, hey, I just appreciate you, those of you that are out there helping each other helping each other go get along. Speaking of Facebook, I just kind of want to bring this up because one of the guys, and you've heard me talk about him before, John Haller, does a prophecy update. You still always link to his prophecy update, as well as others on PrepperChurch.com. PrepperChurch.com did, eventually the hosting did run out, but I was able to pull everything off. And so I'm going to start dropping some of those articles and possibly pushing or putting out the prophecy update again, because I think we're getting to a point here. I know there's a lot of Christians who listen. I know there's a lot of people who aren't Christians who listen to the podcast, but there's a lot of Christians out there who do listen to the podcast. And I believe that we are, in some times that the Bible talks about. And so looking at prophecy and keeping informed, I think, is very, very important. And so I appreciate John Haller's insight. And he always brings out things that I don't have time to look at everything. And so he has that opportunity to get that out there, have the opportunity to listen to that. But recently he's been talking with a guy, his name has just kind of left me, this guy puts out the Haim report, and basically what it is, it's kind of like the Drudge Report or the Prepper website, I guess, of news that's happening that's related to Jerusalem. So a lot of it is from websites and news agencies and whatever that are in Jerusalem or in Israel. But it's, so it's pretty popular. So anyway, there was a thing that happened where they shared it out, this Haim report. They shared it out on his to two Facebook groups, and because of that, they were put like in Facebook Facebook, he calls it Facebook jail, but basically Facebook stopped them from being able to post in any other groups for, to like October 3rd or October 6th, something along those lines. So he's able to post the people that did it. I think there was like 10 or 11 people. The people that did it were able to post to their own timelines, but they're not able to post. And so it's Brian Schrager. That's what the guy's name. I was looking up on Facebook while I was talking. Brian Schrager runs the Heim Report. So anyway, so Brian Schrager and John Haller and a bunch of other guys, about eight or nine other guys, got banned from being able to post on Facebook, in Facebook groups. And so, I mean, what that tells you is that there is a concerted effort to really police what is going out there on Facebook, and has bothered me in the past. So one of the things that I have said in the past, use Facebook for as much as possible. Use it. Use Twitter. Use social media. Instagram. Use all those. But you've got to understand that even if you have a very successful page on there, that Facebook doesn't care. You know, they don't care if it is a very successful page, especially if you're conservative, patriotic, religious, whatever, or yeah, at least you're Christian, right? There's a lot of other religious groups that they wouldn't care about shutting, that they'd leave up. But if you're Christian and right and politically on the right leaning or you're patriotic or whatever, they don't have a problem shutting you down. So you could have the biggest group on Facebook, but they can still shut you down, and they don't care about that, right? And that has happened. There has been other places. There was businesses that completely were shut down. Politically right leaning, and all their everything was tied into Facebook. And when Facebook shuts them down, they're completely shut down. And so I use Facebook groups. I use Facebook pages. I do that not only for Prepper website, but for my church and other groups and stuff like that. I'm going to use Twitter. I'm going to use Instagram. I'm going to use whatever social medias are out there. But I'm not putting all my eggs in one basket, because I know that at any time they can start to shut that down. And so that's one big reason why I always encourage people to join the email list, because the email list, I'm able to download the subscriber list from time to time. But even if they decide to shut down Facebook, or let's just say we come to a time in America where they're really starting to just to come down on anything maybe that's even prepper related or patriotic related or anything along those lines, that's it. It just one day you go to prepper website and it's dark, right? Or it doesn't get updated anymore or whatever might happen. Then I still have the ability to communicate with you, because the email list is not connected to Prepper website. It's not connected to social media. And even if I have the email list here, I can still send out and give updates or whatever, through just using regular email. And so that's why I always encourage people to join the email list. If you're not part of the email list and you'd like to be part of that the e-course that's there, I'm just going to encourage you to go ahead and get on, because I'm going to be pulling that e-course off here really soon. In fact, I already know kind of where I'm going, and it's just a matter of fact of putting it all together. And so as soon as I do, I'm going to just kind of switch that out and kind of keep things fresh, but also provide some other resources out there for you as well. So if you haven't done the e-course and you're interested in that, go ahead and go for it. All right, so let's go ahead and move forward with the first article of the podcast. And this one's coming to us from 1776patriotusa.com, John Rourke's website over there. And the title is Retreat Arrival Checklist. So basically this idea is, you are going to, you bugged out and you're at your retreat. And so, there's a checklist that you need to run through. So I think this is a great, great checklist to have. He also creates a PDF. Somebody in the comments said, hey, can we get a PDF of this? And so he created a PDF so you can download that as well. But it's one of those things where you know, you can use as a retreat for your retreat checklist, but also you can use it for other emergencies as well. You know, it might not be pertinent to a retreat, but there are some things that you can walk through if you find yourself in an emergency situation. So let's go ahead and start. I've been asked several times about when something happens and people first arrive at a retreat location. Questions usually come up regarding who does what and when. Granted, situation details will dictate quite a bit, but having some form of checklist will help remembering things, decrease stress, and allow people to use their brains for thinking. Here is one example that is broken up into days for the first week or so. Day 1 checklist, first 24 hours upon arrival. Injuries. Check and treat. Gather facts from all group members. What has been seen and where. What has been heard, source. What or make sure everyone is informed and educated on all information. And notes should be taken to reference later rather than relying on memory. Yeah, I just want to say really quick, that is so important right there. So if people are coming, if you're going to a retreat location or you are coming, you are gathering people in an emergency situation, I think it's important, like, hey, what do you know? What have you heard? You want to have all the information so you can make informed decisions, right? All right, so here we go. Determine potential threats, if any. If so, set up security watch right away. Get someone on COMO to gain intelligence information. This includes internet, radio, TV, social media, ham, and CB. Inventory all supplies brought to retreat by members to add to inventory list. And how much combined cash, silver, gold is on hand. If safe, formulate a supply run to purchase additional supplies while the ability still exists. See supply run checklist coming soon. So I'll be interested to see that supply run checklist when it comes out. Get an inventory of all fuel. How much is in each vehicle in gallons? How much is currently stored? Is it safe to go out for more? If so, go get some. Get back quickly. How much propane? How much charcoal? If electricity is still on, get all rechargeable batteries into a charger. Water running? If so, fill all available containers. Set up sleeping arrangements at a minimum on a temporary basis. Cook a large filling dinner. Important for morale. I think that's a very important one there. That was mentioned in the comments as well. Just to be able to sit down and eat a good meal and go into your new situation here with some good morale. All right, so day 2 to 3 checklist. House rules, all determined by property owner. Get pets situated that were brought to the retreat. Everyone has communication methods on their body if they venture away from retreat more than normal voice distance. Set up security patrol schedules. Get solar systems set up and running. Set up potable water dispenser. Based on current condition, install light and sound discipline. Set up water filtration methods. Set up alternative bathroom facilities. Set up bathroom sanitation schedule. Camouflage driveway entrance. Set up medical station for self-treatment of minor cuts, burns, and scrapes. Determine any specific projects that need attention and seek volunteer assigned duties. Reach out to family and friends, OPSEC. I want to add one thing here that's not mentioned. If you are in a retreat location, more than likely you are, you're going to be out in the country, out in the wilderness, maybe out in the desert. If you are in a situation where, or in an area where you do have neighbors, you do want to touch base with them. And so they might not be close by, but I think you want to go check. And so hopefully you have already set up some kind of relationship with them. If you have a retreat area, maybe you just go camping, or maybe you do have a home set up there or some kind of shelter there. Hopefully you are meeting your neighbors, because if there is a situation that is going down, just like you are bugging out and you are, your senses are heightened and your stress is up, the same thing is going to be for them as well. So you want to have a relationship with these people ahead of time, know them by their first name, stay in contact with them, get their phone numbers. That's one of the mistakes that I know that we made when we got up to our place. People would come, or my dad's place, people would come by and stop by, and we just, people that were neighbors, and we don't exactly know because it all kind of winds back there, but we didn't get their information. Sometimes we kick ourselves. We know some of them. We got some of their information, but at the beginning we didn't get everybody, and so we wish we would have. But quite often people just stop by and say, "Hey, hi, haven't seen you in a while, whatever," and very, very friendly. And you want to build that relationship up, so when you go to your retreat area, that you're able to go and touch base with them again and say, "Hey, just want to let you know that things are crazy, and we decided to come on up here, and we're going to lay low for a little while. We do have some friends with us, and we're going to kind of stay to ourselves. But if you need anything, let me know," and those kind of deals, where they know that you're a good person, you're not there to do any harm. And so I think that's important to set that up. So day two or three of your checklist, I think that's something that if you are in an area where you do have neighbors, even if they're not really, really close by, I think you still need to go and just check in with them and let them know that you're there. All right, so day 3 to 7 checklist: determine outward patrol locations and schedule, and set up LPOP areas. So that's listening post or observation post areas. Set up defensive position and assign members to areas. Review communication protocols between members in defensive situations. Determine procedures for dealing with strangers approaching people. Gather and set up rain gear clothing, and double check food inventory to determine how many days available for the group. So I think that's important, the inventory. When you're doing, you're watching like a survival movie or a dystopian movie, or you're reading a novel, they're always doing inventory. And I think that's important, is kind of get an idea. You just don't want to start cooking and then one day all of a sudden you run out of food. You want to have a good idea of what you have, maybe even make some menus, so you're thinking ahead and know what you need to be able to do. But anyway, there's 21 comments, a lot of good information here, people leaving their thoughts and their ideas. And like I said, there is a PDF. John did turn the list into a PDF that you can go download. And again, that's over at 1776patriotusa.com. Like always, I'll link to it in the show notes, episode 159 on the prepperwebsitepodcast.com, or if you if you're downloading this from iTunes or one of the other podcast catchers and you get the show notes, then you should have a direct link to be able to go there. All right, our next article comes to us from graywolfsurvival.com. Again, it's graywolfsurvival.com. This is the first time I have I've read one of the articles from Grey Wolf Survival, and so I think this is a good one, and one that everyone should definitely consider and think through. He leaves a lot of great information here, or provides a lot of great information here. So the title of the article is "Why and How to Wargame Your Emergency Disaster Plans." So let's go ahead and get started on this one. I spent a lot of years in the military and have worked with many different agencies and countries in that time. One thing I found universally true is the more effective and higher level groups like Delta, Special Forces, Navy SEALs, SAS, etc., the more they wargame their scenarios and specific missions. These practice runs, throughs, drills, exercises, dress rehearsals include everything from being generally prepared for possible missions to building mock-up buildings and neighborhoods and using all available intel to make things as realistic as possible. I'm not saying that you need to be prepared for emergencies to that level. This is their job. But I think you do need to use dress rehearsals to flesh out vulnerabilities and deficiencies in your plans. And the more realistic you make these rehearsals, the better. According to a 2015 FEMA report, 60% of Americans aren't practicing for disasters. Pretty much every part of your emergency plan, your family emergency communication plan, your bug out route plan, using a ham radio, dealing with medical emergencies, surviving in the woods, dealing with a power outage at home, and many, many other topics require hands-on training as well as just walking through the plan you currently have so you can update it and try again. The danger is that if you don't actually walk through the process in a semi-realistic fashion, you won't realize you're not prepared until it's too late. As they say, don't practice until you get it right. Practice until you can't get it wrong. Discovering your abilities and shortcomings. One of the biggest mistakes that preppers or others that try to prepare for emergencies or survival situations and don't want to call themselves preppers make is about what they put in their bug out bag. The biggest of the big mistakes is that they put way too much in their bags, so they have it just in case. But then when they try to carry it all, they find out there's no way they could actually use it in an emergency that might require them to walk several miles over various terrains, if they ever bother to put it on and walk around at all. Once you get a bag, throw it on your back and try to use it in the area that you'd actually most likely use it, as well as possible areas and scenarios that would be more difficult. You may be surprised. I had been rucking with heavy weights for quite a while in the Army, about 100 pounds with gear, armor, and ammo, and was quite used to it. Then, when I was spinning up to go to Afghanistan the first time, we spent a few days walking through terrain with large round river rocks about the size of your fist, and I ended up breaking my foot due to the pressure being placed under the center of my foot. My back, legs, and lungs were ready, but my feet weren't. Discover problems with your gear. Speaking of gear, I wrote a hugely popular article on how I put together a lightweight bug out bag. It took me a long time to figure out what I was going to use because every time I thought I had just the right stuff, I took it all out in the woods and tried it and found out something just didn't work well enough. Some things didn't work as advertised, like these emergency blankets. I've since switched to these, and some seem like a good idea, such as putting key rings on the ends of a chainsaw blade for a compact saw. The rings not only hurt your fingers too bad, they pull apart after a while. One solution may be to use tougher, smaller rings and loop leather handles through them, but I haven't tried it. I've since switched to the 7 saw, which is definitely bigger, but actually works. Practice does not make perfect, only perfect practice makes perfect. And another example you can read all day long about how a weapon works, how to shoot like a Navy SEAL, or even specific books on a specific skill such as single-person close-quarter battles. But until you actually get out on the range and shoot that weapon, you're not really preparing yourself. I use this example because it's easy to understand what I mean about how the realism of preparation can affect your ability to perform when the time comes. Studying and reading books by experts is better than just sitting at home and thinking about things on your own. Going to the range is better than just reading books. Practical shooting exercises with moving targets that shoot back at you, the more they hurt, the better. Paintball guns with rubber bullets are better than paintball guns with regular ammo, and simunition training is better than either. It is much more effective at telling you where your deficiencies lie. We used to train with a room-sized, realistic, computerized video simulator with specially designed weapons that would interact with the system, and if you got hit, there was a taser attached to your hip that would drop you to your knees. After the first hit, you certainly pay more attention. Once you get that down, if what you're preparing for is to defend your house if someone breaks in, run through a plan of how exactly you'd defend yourself if they broke into your house from various entry points, with you in various parts of your house at the time of the break-in. You may find that in one of your scenarios that if they come in through one way and you're in the living room or kitchen, that you may be cut off from whatever your weapon is that you are going to use, thereby requiring you to go to plan B. Do you have a plan B? You may either need to have a secondary weapon that may buy you time available, which could be either a secondary firearm, a chef's knife, or even an ornamental samurai sword. Don't laugh, it could be better than grabbing a lamp. I actually have one of these swords in my living room, or work on some other plan. Suggestions on wargaming. In preparing for emergencies, the best way to do it is to look at what situation may happen and what you're going to do about it, and then try to come up with a way to duplicate that situation as closely as possible. Here are some examples. Extended power outage. Most people plan on a power outage happening for a few hours, so they just buy flashlights and emergency candles to keep around the house. In the case of earthquakes, hurricanes, floods, or even perhaps an EMP or other regional occurrences, your power may be out for much longer. Do you know how that would really affect you? Try actually shutting off the power to your home for longer and longer times. I'll bet that you'll start seeing problems that you'll never thought of, such as what to do with the food in your freezer or a fridge, or how you'll keep your home warm or cold, or even cook without power. You won't really know until you actually try it. Getting a hold of your family in an emergency when cell towers are down. As of this writing, pretty much no one in Puerto Rico can use their cell phones to call anyone due to Hurricane Maria. What would you do if this happened? One thing you'd want to do in your emergency family communication plan is to practice. Decide on some trigger, something mentioned on the news, your designated communication person deciding it so, whatever you can think of that won't allow people to try to game the game. And then time how long it takes to reach every person in your group without using cell phones or the internet. There are many scenarios that you might think of to do this that will require different planning, such as what to do if some or all of you are out of town, if one person has an emergency that the others need to know about, or if the whole area is affected. Just think it through, come up with a plan to war game the scenario, and try it. Try to use and test all your gear when possible. If you have a good supply of emergency food stocked in case of emergencies, make sure you actually use it. The stuff may last for years, but not forever, and it would be nice if you knew how to make decent recipes with what you have or know what seasonings or other foods to get beforehand, as well as how to cook it all. Make sure you also use all the gear you've stashed in your emergency go bag or at your home so you know how to use it all and that it all works. The last thing you need to be in the middle of a disaster and find out you don't actually know how to reach someone on your ham radio, which is why you need a ham radio license no matter what the guys on the forums might tell you. Forced or voluntary evacuation. If something happened where you had to leave your home, fire, flood, martial law, impending hurricane, etc., would you be ready? What if you had 5 days to leave? What if it was only 5 hours, or 5 minutes, or 5 seconds? Do you have all your important items and people ready to do that? Practice emergency drills to see if you are, by having a designated person declare at random that an emergency has just happened, and have them explain the details as they know them at their time and how long everyone has to evacuate to X. X could be a mile down the road, a family member's house, or whatever. This planning is intimately connected to your COMO plan. Practice for wilderness survival. Camping is pretty much the best way to do that in most cases. Just make sure that if you're using camping as a way to teach your family or group about survival, that you don't forget to make it enjoyable and rewarding. Give assignments to each person to teach some aspects of survival. I suggest working with them before they present so they not only teach the right thing, don't feel like an idiot because they incorrectly prepared. Don't rely solely on the experienced members. As much as possible, try to get younger or less experienced members to have to solve problems without having the leaders give them instruction. If they're stuck having to deal with something on their own, many people get separated from their family members during hurricanes. They need to have some basic understanding of what to do without having someone tell them what to do. Look at things from the outside. The main thrust of my job as a counterintelligence agent was to protect our forces from what the enemy can see or do. One way we would do this is by creating a red team that would be the enemy, also called OP4 in tactical training. The Army defines red teaming as structured, iterative process executed by trained, educated, and practiced team members that provides commanders an independent capability to continuously challenge plans, operations, concepts, organizations, and capabilities in the context of the operational environment and from our partners' and adversaries' perspectives. Our groups would try to infiltrate or observe an organization or facility, or try to gather intelligence from personnel or equipment to see how good their OPSEC and processes were. Look at how other people might affect your plans if they wanted to do it, and have someone pretend to be them during your exercise, and then have a debriefing afterwards with everyone to discuss what each person observed and what you could improve. Mid-exercise complications. Once you think your group is doing okay with training exercises, have the designated training person, whatever you want to call them, call out some possible complications and see how everyone deals with it. For example, if you find one person has been carrying the majority of the gear, declare that they've now broken their leg. Could they deal with the leg and then the gear? If someone has made a decision to do something that you see could be a potential problem, such as taking a shortcut to an area while the rest of the group continues the correct way, declare that cell service is down for the area and you just got a flat tire. Do you have the tools and experience in the car to fix the flat tire? What will the other group do once they arrive and find themselves alone? If you practiced a bug-out route to get to a family member's house or just out of town, designate a destination. Declare that a tree has fallen in the road or traffic is backed up for the next 50 miles or the road is flooded and you can't use the main road. How would you get there now? If you're camping, declare that your primary and secondary methods of starting a fire were missing, stolen, lost, whatever. How would they start a fire then, assuming there were no campers around to help? Make your training useful but enjoyable. If you want people to actually want to do this sort of training, make sure they like doing it. Assign each person a particular primary job in each plan, but have backups. Have them teach something to the group about their job. First aid, using a radio, filtering water, starting a fire. Getting people involved is very effective in getting buy-in from people. Make sure that people, including you, aren't getting stressed out during your training exercises. Remember, this should be something you should be continually doing and not just a short-term thing. All right, so good article over there by graywolfsurvival.com on thinking through and wargaming your emergency disaster. And I love the part when he was talking about, you know, thinking through is good. Reading books is better than just kind of just sitting down and thinking through things. And then getting out there and practicing. You know, he basically said that you can always take it up to the next level. You know, there's a lot of people that just read articles online and that's it, you know, and they don't ever go and they practice. Or there's a lot of people that buy gear and they don't ever go out there and use it. And so that is the thing that, you know, you find that over and over again on a lot of articles, is like, go out there, test the gear, you know, play around with it, go camping, go use it in your backyard, go do, you know, go see if the stuff works. And do that. And then the other thing is the gaming, the actual, you know, thinking through different scenarios and what might be going on in your, you know, in your, where you're at, you know. So if you live on the Gulf Coast, you're thinking through hurricanes. Yeah, I can guarantee you there's a lot of people who have been through hurricanes here on the Gulf Coast. A lot of people who have gone through hurricanes. I mean, I've lived in Houston all my life, gone through many hurricanes. And those kinds of things, and was very, very well prepared for this Hurricane Harvey that went. But no one, it doesn't matter how often you prepared for hurricanes, no one was prepared for the flooding that happened. I mean, that was crazy. I mean, different parts of town have flooded before, but you know, that was one of the things that recently we kind of talked about with other pastors up at that pastor's conference, is that this flooding, normally when the flooding has happened in Houston, it was just one area of town. But the flooding that we experienced in Harvey was all over town. And so, you know, that's when you could wargame, but you that was an experience that no one has ever wargamed before, right? Or had thought about. And so, you're thinking those kinds of things through. That's why you need to be able to you wargame, because when you're able to wargame, you're able to think through things, you're able to see things a little bit differently, and then you're able to adapt and be flexible. And I think that's important, because there's people who that I know of who just froze when the water started rising in their house. And someone that we knew had to be rescued with chest deep water because they were almost in shock. Or where other people are like, hey, it's time to get out, time to bug out, you know, grab this, and this, and we know what we need to do to get out. And so being able to be flexible and adapting, and that's why you do all those kinds of things. So think about your situation in your area. You know, what kinds of things do you need to think through and, you know, and go through? And you process it. Start with thinking it through. Maybe if your wife is on board or your spouse is on board. I keep saying wife, but there's a lot of women who listen, I know, to the podcast, and a lot who have joined the Facebook group. So maybe your spouse, you think this through. You think these scenarios through. Hey, what is the most likely scenario that's going to affect us? And then start thinking it through. And then maybe start walking it through. And maybe you walk it through a little slowly. Maybe you start to put some things in place. And maybe you do go through some dry runs I think that's very, very valuable. So good article over here at Grey Wolf Survival. There are a lot of links here, so you definitely want to go check this one out. A lot of links, and you can tell, I mean, I alluded to those when I was reading them. But even the, and I know I linked to it, but I just want to go check out that other link again on the light bug out bag. Don't you want to just go check that one out? I know that I've linked to it before, but I'm going to go check that one out again and see if I can see when that one was written. It's been a while. I know. Yeah, it's an extensive article, and you can go check this out. A lot of good stuff. Oh man, yeah, he's got a lot of good stuff on this one. So you definitely want to go check out that one. Yeah, oh wow. Long article. Let me see if I can find a date on here. I don't see a date, but there was a comment from May 14th, 2015. So, you know, a couple of years old there, but it was a very extensive comment or a very extensive article. So, you know, if you want to go check that one out, might find a lot of great stuff there, good information. All right, guys, that's it for the Monday podcast. I appreciate you so much hanging in there and being with me through starting out this week. I look forward to, like I said earlier, another week of a podcast and spending time with you. So with that, choose to live a more self-reliant life. Choose not to be so dependent on the government, grid, or the grind. Until tomorrow, stay prepped and aware. Peace.